the two Boomer Bras. I'm Dr. Sharon Rosen.
And I'm Rebecca Forstad-Olkowski with Life, Love, Laugh.
And unsolicited advice.
Coming to you this time from the podcaster's farm pasture, I'm Dr. Sharon Rosen.
And I'm Rebecca Forstad-Olkowski.
And we are
the two Boomer Bros. All right. Okay, we have a special guest today.
We do.
Yeah, his name is Bill Powers, and he came from the pharmaceutical world.
Wow.
He was very successful in that, and then he decided
to... become a novelist.
Yeah, he just turned it all around and became a novelist. Say hi, Bill.
Hello, everyone. How are you?
We're great. Now, were you a pharmacist? Were you in the industry? What exactly did you do?
I was in research and development. I'm actually a toxicologist by training. I have a PhD in toxicology.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
And that is.
Toxicology is the study of poison.
Right.
Right,
so
yeah.
I am a poison doctor.
So were you developing things that were poisonous or making sure that things weren't?
I was making sure that things were safe. When you go to the drugstore, you get that little bottle, you take it home, you don't know what's in it.
No, this is very true.
How do you know you aren't going to drop dead when you take it?
Yeah.
So I was the guy who made sure that nothing bad happened when you took it.
Ah, very good. Thank you, Bill.
Yeah, thank goodness.
Yeah. Were you still working in this industry when you decided to start writing, or did you write before that? How did this metamorphosis occur?
I've always been interested in writing and in stories. I actually tried to write my first novel when I was in grad school. It was science fiction, and I got about halfway through it. I got about 25,000-30,000 words. And I looked at it and I realized it was horrible. Horrible. So I put it aside. I still have it somewhere. I look at it to remind myself how bad it could be. And I just put that dream on the shelf for a while. And probably about a little over 10 years ago, I decided I really want to try this again. And I was still working in the pharmaceutical industry at that time. And that's why I set my first book in the pharmaceutical industry, because I didn't have time to go out and do research because I was working full time. So I figured, well, I know the pharmaceutical business, so I'll set my story in the pharmaceutical world and make it a thriller and just build a thriller inside a fictional global pharmaceutical company. So that's how I got started.
I would imagine that would be a scary world in a way. I mean, we want to hear all the dirt on that. That book is called The Farmhouse,
that's
right?
The Farmhouse, P-H-A-R-M.
Yeah, I like that. That's really clever.
That's great, yes.
Yeah.
In of itself, that already sounds scary.
It's a little scary, yeah.
Your main character is based on you, based on your family. I mean, as they say, there's always a bit of the author in every character.
There is. And the main character is a little bit based on me. The main character is a toxicologist, just like I was a toxicologist. It's a story about family. And The main character is Nicholas Harding. And he's a mid-level executive in the pharmaceutical company. He's going through a life crisis. His wife died about a year ago. He's trying to raise his 11-year-old daughter as a single parent. And he's also trying to grow his career in the business. And then he gets caught up in this plot to take over the company where he's going to be made the fall guy. And there's a possibility that he could lose his job, he could go to jail, some people have died. It's just a mess that he's in the middle of, and he has to find some way to get out of this.
Okay.
Wow.
So, learn any pharmaceutical industry secrets in this?
Not really, no. The funny thing is, you know, people who work in the pharmaceutical business obviously are very serious people. They're scientists. They don't really understand fiction. And so, all my friends look at me and they say, "This isn't really fiction, is it? You didn't make this up." I tell them, yes, I really did. It's fiction.
That is funny. Wow.
So they really think these kind of things are going on back then.
Yeah, they do. But they're not.
They're not. Okay.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, as we become we are baby boomers.
We are baby boomers.
So am I.
And we're way in there as baby boomers.
As we become less young.
We have more pharmaceuticals. I mean, you know.
Yes, we do.
Everything on TV is targeted towards us and with all these big names and, mm-hmm. and all these horrible
side effects.
Side effects. It's kind of scary.
They make it sound worse than it really is. When you develop a drug, you test the drug in people in clinical trials, you generate this list of side effects. And most of them you rarely, if ever, see, but you still mm-hmm. have to list them. So when you read that list of 10, 15, 20, these horrible side effects, it just sounds terrible.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the commercials and you're going like, no. Yeah, and then plus if the fact that they cost about $12,000 a pill or something.
Yeah, they are quite expensive. Yeah.
Yeah, what do you think about that?
About the cost of in this country? Is that what you're asking? As opposed to other countries?
I don't know.
What do you have to say?
Yeah, what do you have to say
about that? Okay, it's a fair question. It's a valid question. And I think that the reason drugs cost more in the United States and probably in Western Europe is because most drugs are discovered and developed in the United States and in Western Europe. So the cost of R&D has to be absorbed by the companies in the United States and Western Europe.
What's now, R&D?
Research and development. I'm not going to try and say that drug companies only exist for the good of mankind. Drug companies exist to make a profit for their shareholders. That's why they're there. I did a little write-up last week. Right now, to develop a new drug costs about $2.8 billion.
Was that billion with a B?
Billion with a B.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah. And it takes about 10 to 12 years. So it's a very, very resource-intensive undertaking to get a new drug to market. And it takes a decade and over $2.5 billion. So that's where a lot of the cost comes from.
It really is.
Well, especially when you hear that, you know, it's just like, oh my, you know, you look at your bill and then a lot of things have been upped because of insurance companies.
They have. And I know the drug companies have gotten a bad rap because drugs in Canada are a lot cheaper than drugs in the United States. And, well, that's easy to explain. The Canadian government caps the price of drugs, so they buy the drugs that are manufactured here in the United States. They sell them at a lower cost in Canada. It's the same thing. It's the same drug.
That's interesting.
We have to kind of be careful. If we put too many limits on the cost of drugs, that's going to cause investors to go someplace else to invest their money, and it's going to cut down on research and development. So it's kind of a balancing act.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to get too far out of control one way or the other.
So are you still working in that industry, or are you a full-time author now?
I am a full-time author now.
Wow. That's
fantastic.
I'm loving every second of it.
I bet.
Yeah.
So I know you have your second book coming out, which you can tell us about. Do you have a third one in the makings already?
My second book is out. It came out a few months ago.
Oh, okay.
It's a trilogy of the Harding family. So the second book takes place about 10 years after the first book. And I can tell you how it starts, the second book. Andrea Harding, who's the daughter of Nicholas Harding, the protagonist, has just graduated from college, from Princeton University. And she's about to go off to law school. But before she goes to law school, she's going to take a summer off and go to Europe. She's in her apartment. She gets a phone call at 2:00 in the morning, and it's two New Jersey state troopers saying, "You have to come downstairs. It's urgent that we talk to you." So she doesn't know what's going on. She goes downstairs, and they tell her that your father, Nicholas, and his brother, his business partner, Michael, have been shot, and they're lying in the hospital near death.
Oh, my.
So that's how that story starts. And it's called the Torch is Passed, because in the first story, Andrew was a little girl, and Nicholas was the protector. In the second story, The Torch is Passed, Nicholas is hurt, badly hurt, and Andrew has to step in and become his protector, of the family, and try to figure out what's going on and who's trying to kill her whole family.
Wow.
And then you've got the third one underway?
I'm working on the third one, and the title of the third one is The Lost Codicil. And codicil is an addendum to a contract or an addendum to a will or an agreement.
Right.
And in The Lost Codicil, can't tell too much about it without giving away the story, but it takes place after The Torch is Passed. And because of the things that happen in that story, Nicholas' life is just a mess and his mind is just a mess. And his best friend, Don Marshall, said they both love history. And Don says, "You need a great adventure." When Teddy Roosevelt had adversity in his life, he would always go off on a great adventure. He would go to the Dakota Badlands or on an African safari or on a cruise down the Amazon River. It says, "We need a great adventure. So let's take some time off and you and I go have this great adventure." And they do, but it turns out to be a lot more adventure than they thought. And they just stumble into this hornet's nest of trouble they had not anticipated. And that's The Lost Codicil.
Wow.
Oh, okay.
We're getting into thrills and chills
here. I know.
You know, you were saying that you switched over to writing, but what did it take to get your book published and all of that? What was that whole process?
It was a long process. And when I was writing the Farmhouse, the first book, about halfway through, I got stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered, you know, can I really do this? I have conversations with myself. I said, either you're going to do it or you're not. If you're not going to do it, put it away, just walk away, forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I took 2 weeks off from work. I locked up in my library here at home, and I just wrote and wrote and wrote, and I finished the first draft of the book, and that was about 10 years ago.
Wow, that's a good idea.
That is. I
wish
that's
I could
a good
do
idea,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except I'd be on Facebook or something.
I do tend to procrastinate. That's my problem. I tend to procrastinate. And then I was trying to get it published. And that was before the big surge that you saw that we have now in self-publishing. So I went the traditional route, went trying to get an agent, and I collected, I don't know, 30 plus rejection letters.
Right.
I put it aside for a while, and I rewrote it. I tried again about 3 or 4 years later. I tried to get an agent, and I collected about 30 rejection letters. This time they were electronic, so I was making progress. I was about to go the self-publishing route when I finally signed a deal with a small independent publisher in 2012, and they published The Farmhouse. It turned out that wasn't particularly good business arrangements, so I ended up breaking that contract. And then I self-published The Farmhouse myself independently, and I also self-published The Torch's Pass myself.
Oh, very good.
So you like doing it that way better?
Yeah, for several reasons. One, if you look at the traditional way of route of publishing, going to the big publishing houses, first off, Amazon has just changed that world entirely. I guess 15 years ago, there were maybe more than a dozen publishing houses. Now there are only 5.
Wow.
And the time that it takes to get published, it can take you maybe 6 months to find an agent. Then it can take you 6 months for your agent to find a publisher. And with editing and getting in their schedule, it can take a year to a year and a half for the book to actually come out. So from the time you finish a book to the time it's actually published can be 2+ years. Well, if I was 20 years younger, that might be okay. But at my age, I can't afford to wait 3 years to get a book out. But so this way, I have complete control. And when I finish my book, I have to hire someone to do everything for me. I hire an editor. Mm-hmm. I hire a professional publisher. I work with BookBaby. I hire a professional to do my cover, to do all this, the setting of the actual book, both the print book and the electronic book. I hired a publicist as well. And I just do it all myself.
That's a good idea. I mean, because the largest amount of people who are producing new books seem to be over 50 anyway, because you have more to talk about. You don't want to wait forever. You don't know what's going to happen.
You want to get this.
Yeah.
I know for me, I'd be jumping from one shiny object to the next.
Yeah.
So you've got a big following online and with your books?
I have a pretty good sized following, yeah, on you've got Twitter and Facebook.
And you've got a blog. Do you publish to your blog pretty often?
I try to. not as often as I should. I guess I'll be on the blog maybe once a month. I'm more active on Facebook and Twitter.
Ah, got it. Okay.
Well, good. Yeah. So going back to your old career, just because that's kind of fun to talk about.
Yes.
What was the scariest experience as far as like finding something toxic? We want to know what's dangerous out there, actually.
There's one, actually, there's a class of drugs that's on the market. They're called quinolones.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
They're antibiotics. I'm trying to think of some that are on the market now. Levaquin is one of them.
Okay.
And we were developing a class of those compounds. And they have a particular toxicity or side effect where they cause lesions on bone lesions.
God. Oh, that sounds horrible.
That's awful.
And we had one we were taking into a clinical study. We found this effect unexpectedly. We were hoping we wouldn't find it, but we did. So we had to just pull everything and stop the clinical trial. So that was a little scary.
That is. Wow.
The biggest issue for me was because my group, it was called preclinical safety. What we did was we tested the developmental compounds, developmental drugs, new drugs before they went to people. My group tested them in animals to make sure that we could identify the toxicities in animals and know what the safe dose was to take into people.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
What kept me awake at night was that the first time we were taking the drug and putting it into people to make sure that my group had done their job correctly and we didn't make a mistake, because it never happened to us, but there have been cases where drug companies have taken a new drug into their first clinical trial and just horrible, horrible things have happened.
Wow.
Up to people dying.
Oh, that's awful. Do you think that some of them actually push the drugs through just partly to make a profit without...
Or to make up for the R&D.
Without really going...
It could be that that's happened. I know something that was going on in the industry maybe 15 years ago. Some of the drug companies were testing their new drugs in countries, I think what the correct term is these days, less developed countries.
Uh-huh. Like a third world country?
Yes, like a third world country. Knowing they were never going to sell the drug there because there's no market there, no one there has any money, but you can get things done a lot faster there,
right.
And there's not as much bureaucracy there. So you can cut corners.
But they don't tested on people there, do they? I mean,
yeah, they were at that time.
Oh my gosh. So they were like the guinea pigs?
Yeah.
Oh, that's scary.
And they pay them so that they,
yeah.
So they go ahead and accept it. Yeah.
That's been pretty much eliminated now.
Oh, I hope
Thank
so.
Goodness.
Horrible.
We heard about that a lot in chiropractic school.
Oh, you did? Yeah. This is something I hadn't heard about.
Yeah.
How?
Yeah.
Because the regulations in other countries are different. And if you paid them and it was an impoverished area, they went, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sure. Sure.
What was one of the more maybe exciting drugs that you guys developed, like something that really helped people?
I'm trying to think of some of the more exciting. Well, when I was there, there was one called erythropoietin or EPO. And what this did was it stimulated red blood cell production. So people who had chronic anemia to the point where they could barely function, this allowed them to function a normal life. Some of the new therapies that are being developed now for some of the cancer therapies are just absolutely incredible. They're using gene therapies.
Yeah, because, you know, obviously there's a lot of people in our age group that are through that right now. And
yeah, you probably heard that about, I guess maybe a year or so ago, Jimmy Carter had brain cancer.
Oh, yes, that was.
And they were able to develop a treatment for him, and they were able to not just treat his cancer and stop his cancer, they were able to cure his cancer.
That's amazing.
It's absolutely incredible.
My husband had a brain tumor. He passed away from it, like a glioblastoma. And, you know, there were, at the time, it was in 2001, they couldn't really do much with it. They were giving him chemo, and it was almost like, why are they bothering
to
do
that? Why are you torturing him?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's changed a lot. And if you look, the other area where you've seen a lot of progress in the last 10 years is HIV therapy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, people are absolutely living now.
Before, 15 years ago, a diagnosis of HIV was basically a death sentence. All you could do is just go home and get your affairs in order.
Yeah.
Now in the Western world, HIV is a chronic, manageable disease.
That's incredible. I mean, I was aware of that because people are living with it. You look at Magic Johnson, obviously.
Yeah.
People
are
living with it. But man, the fact that that's possible is just incredible. It really
is.
Yeah, because I remember in the 80s, people that I knew, I was in the theater, we were both in theater, and you know, they were just dying right and left.
Right and left, yeah. Lost a lot of friends.
Yeah. Do you see a cure for cancer coming soon, or maybe through the immune therapy? Or
from what I'm reading, it looks like cancer is going to be similar to HIV, and that a lot of the cancers that we see today will be chronically manageable.
Wow.
Within the next 5 or 10 years.
That really is exciting.
Oh, really? 5 or 10 years?
That's huge.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Exciting. I like that.
Yeah, no, I have a friend who's undergoing a clinical trial for bladder cancer, and he said the last time that they checked on how things were going, his doctor was all but kicking up her heels at how well it was working. So it's amazing. It really is amazing.
Yeah, the progress is just incredible. Of course, then you have all these weird things popping up out of nowhere, like the Zika virus.
Yep.
Yeah, that's scary.
Yeah.
The
microscopic world will continue to find ways to try to kill us.
It will. It will.
The mosquitoes love me.
Yeah, we're not always the top of the food chain.
They are. They totally are.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I remember I went down to the Caribbean, and I went on a sailing trip in the Grenadines. And I was like one big boil because they just were eating me alive until I was trying everything, you know, all the toxic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I found a set of natural oils that was in Grenada, and I put it on, and I swear to God, the mosquitoes just like,
they left you alone.
Over, and it was completely natural.
Maybe your blood type is O positive.
No, it's A positive.
I'm O positive, and yeah, they love me too.
I've heard they prefer O positive. I'm not sure why. But
I'm so happy.
I'm so
lucky.
Yeah. But they liked me. I don't know. Maybe I smelled like an O positive.
Yeah, it's strange.
You get sweaty and you change blood types. I don't know. Yeah, it's scary with all those people going down to the Olympics, I think.
I think I'd hold off on that, especially if I was in my 20s. And
problem is they're all going to come back.
Yeah, and I don't think we know that much about it yet. I mean, I know CDC keeps putting out these directives, but they really don't know that much about the disease, Zika, and what it really does once people are exposed to it. I think it's probably a lot of more subtle things that the virus can do. And we just don't know.
Oh, great.
Yeah. They're not only going to deal with all the mosquitoes, but then they have to swim in the...
Oh, my goodness.
I know.
I saw that on the news the other night. It just looked horrible.
I know. There aren't enough drugs in the world.
No.
I always thought that would be the coolest place to go, and I'm sure it will be again. I just think they're going through a bad spot.
They're going through a bad spot.
They're having a bad time right now.
Yeah. Oh man.
Oh my gosh. Rio Olympic outbreak. We just don't even want to know.
What about the super bugs? Because that's something that is really scary, I think, for boomers, because they go in and you get a knee replacement or something.
That's a huge problem right now. And right now, there are some bugs out there. There's really nothing that can touch them.
Really?
Is the MRSA virus one like that, or did they find a way to smash that?
I think there are a few drugs left that can still work on MRSA, just one or two. But the way that the bugs evolve, it could be that in a few years, those one or two won't work.
Right, yeah. They're fast-evolving little monsters.
Yeah, I actually got it one time from a hangnail.
Oh my God.
A freaking hangnail. That's all it was. And then... Yeah. My finger got swollen and I went into an urgent care.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden I get this call from my health provider. It's like, you know, really scary sounding, like you've got this horrible thing going on.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
God, I just...
You never know, you know, where you might get infected with it. I mean, the bugs are everywhere.
Luckily, I got tested afterwards and it was gone. So oh. I think it wasn't a chronic thing.
I tell that to people about, you know, people who are really germ phobic, because you just can't live like that. The necrotizing fasciitis is on everybody's skin all the time.
Yeah.
It just
yeah.
happens of whether or not you cut yourself in the wrong spot and they get in.
Oh.
Right, right. Whether your immune system is right. lowered for whatever reason.
Yes, exactly.
I just decided not to get sick.
Yeah,
ever.
That's the best route to go. There's all kinds of scary things out there.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be interesting. You know, I think your book sounds really...
Yeah, your books sound terrific. I already can't wait for the third one, and I haven't read the first one yet.
Good. Thank you.
No, they sound terrific.
Yeah. Do you have any ideas about maybe going in different directions besides, like, it's more like thrillers, or is that what you like?
Thrillers are my happy spot. Well, actually, the two. I love thrillers, but I also love history.
Uh-huh. Mm.
And I may consider writing either a political thriller or a historical alternate history kind of story.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, that sounds that was cool. Fun.
So no yeah. visiting science fiction for you?
No. I don't think so. I mean, I like to read it once in a while, but I don't think I'd be good at that.
No, historical alternate timeline kind of thing. Those are
like
those
steampunk.
Are fun.
Those are hard to do. Writing a story where there's a shift in time or time travel is hard to do that well.
Yeah.
It is. No, those have to be so carefully crafted
to
not violate the real timeline too much.
Yeah.
Well, not only that, because there's a lot of fans that of those things, and mm-hmm. they're very fussy about all
yes.
that.
Yes.
There's one, I don't know if you've seen it, so it's a TV show now. It's called The Man in the High Castle.
No.
Oh, I've heard of it, I think. Yeah.
It was a book written in the 1960s. In 1962, the author was Philip K. Dick. And The Man in the High Castle, it takes place in the early 1960s. And in this alternate version of history, the Germans won World War II.
Oh, wow.
Oh, boy.
And in the United States, the East Coast is controlled by Germany. The West Coast is controlled by Japan. And the central United States is kind of the neutral zone.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
Either Netflix or Amazon came out with a show last year. They made a TV show, The Man in the High Castle. They did an outstanding job.
I'm going to have to look that
up. I'm going to have to look that up because we get a bunch of Emmy screeners. So maybe
okay.
that. I don't know.
Yeah, I definitely recommend that one.
Well, we've come to the end of the podcast. I don't know how that's
okay.
But I know.
It's always happened.
We were talking about bugs.
Huh? Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk more about bugs.
Bugs and germs.
But anyway, tell everybody where they can get your book, where your website is, and all that good stuff.
Okay. My website is authorbillpowers.com, AUTHORBILLPOWERS.com. That's my website. And you can also find my book on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Apple iBooks.
Cool. All right. Well, everybody get out there and check it out. And we'll be putting it on our Author's Corner, which we have on our website,
yes.
to boomerbroads.com, the number 2, boomerbroads.com. And then you just click on the little tab that says Author's Corner. And then we even have a Pinterest board for midlife author books.
These books are for everyone.
Yes, they are. And, well, just because we are. But whoever comes on our show gets on there.
That's right.
Is, yeah. And so, make sure to do that and subscribe to our channel on iTunes.
Okay.
Or if you can't figure out iTunes, because we've been asking people to give us reviews on iTunes, but, mm-hmm. you know, they'll go there and they'll go, I don't know. I can't can't find out the review.
I know.
I swear to God, I go on there and I can't figure it out. So you can also go onto our website and click on where it says raves, and there's a little contact form in there, and you can leave us a review, and we'll put it on our website, and then from time to time we may even mention your name on our show.
Our listeners, yeah, we thank the listeners here and there, and absolutely our authors. Thank you so much, Bill, for giving us the time today.
Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you.
To find out more about chiropractic healthcare, holistic health questions, and dynamic spinal stick yoga, go to my website, SharoneRosen.com.
And please visit my website, BabyBoomster.com. Food, wellness, lifestyle, and travel for women over 50. Subscribe to Two Boomer Broads on iTunes, and please leave us a review. Or listen to our show at TwoBoomerBroads.com.